Welcome to the Jennifer O'Brien Show. I am your host, Jennifer O'Brien. I am super excited today. I have comedian Darren Strebel with me. Good morning, Darren. How you doing?
Well, it's morning, so I'm not sure. It's going to be a few hours before I can get a bearing.
I know
what's going on in my brain, you know. But I got this. I'm happy. I should be good. So
you got your. I got my coffee too. Let's cheers.
What does your coffee mug say?
It says you're on. It says you're on mute. But you're not, because that would be really hard. Just what your answers now.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. That's a very good idea. Well, no, it's an honor to be on your show.
Wow, I'm excited. I finally got you to come on. And so how's it? You're up there up in Minnesota, huh?
I am. Boy, as I look out here, so it's March 16th.
Yeah.
As I look out in the yard, it's over my waist in snow.
Wow.
And and it's not like all the thrown snow from the, like, I had to go in the backyard and I was just like struggling through it. And we're expecting another 6 inches today. And
whoa.
Yeah, I question why we live up here. I don't know. What you get in the summer, it's like, well, this is kind of nice, and then three weeks later all the snow starts again and you go, well, you know,
it's like 3 week summers. How
yeah,
lovely.
Exactly. But yeah, I grew up here, so I guess I don't know anything better. But yeah. As my kids are getting older, they're like, yeah, I'm never gonna live there ever. They want to get out. Yeah. My oldest went to Japan. So the lengths people will go to escape Minnesota is amazing.
Yeah, but it's not like he just moved down south. He's like, no, I'm leaving the country. I can't deal with this.
Another country. Yeah. I'd try another planet. There just aren't resources to get there at this point. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, a lot of people love Minnesota. It's pretty. If you like winter sports, you know.
Hey.
You know, but that means you have to go outside.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. So I haven't gone outside since I was a kid. So I don't
you just view it from your window.
That's right. That's it. Doing my little radio show. Look out the window, go, ooh, I'm not going out there.
So. Oh, segue. Let's talk about the Darren Strebel show. Tell me about your show. Yeah.
Now, I think we're about 11 years deep. Mm-hmm. I was approached by a syndicator, 11 years ago, 12 years ago, and looking for just a weekend program with, I think his original idea for the show was just a funny, like, almost like what they do on XM radio, just bits. Mm-hmm. And then I'd be kind of the voice of it. But I said, you know, most of the comedians, that do like family shows all know each other. And we have this kind of fun camaraderie and stuff like that. It'd be fun to bring them on and talk to them and talk about what's going on with them. And they're really funny to talk to. And he said, so we could do interviews. Like, yeah, that'd be fun. And then play the bits too. So it's good. We've been in, I think we're in about 120 markets or something like that. I'm not sure now. It goes up and down. Just a weekend show and fun. I just enjoy it. As my manager says, it keeps me off the streets looking for food. So
the snowy streets of Minnesota.
But since I've started that, you know, everyone's got shows now, like case in point, you know. So if you want to get a good taste of what this world is like, you got a lot of options now. But it's fun. I grew up doing radio, so it was kind of fun to keep going with that and get a microphone and, you know, have a studio. It's funny
you got that voice for it too.
Well, thank you. I got hired voice. When I was 15 years old, I think. Mm-hmm. 16.
Oh, really?
They said I sounded like I was 40. So I'm 52 now, so I sound like I'm 156. But I still go on the weekends and go in and, you know, the equipment there, I mean, the equipment I have is probably 1/20th of the cost, maybe less,
right?
You know, and it sounds so much better. There's so much you can do with tech these days that makes it fun. So yeah, it's different.
It's true, right? Like, so 11 years ago, podcasting wasn't like a big thing. I mean, So you're kind of pioneering producing this show. Always have been able to produce it out of your house, right? I mean, were you ever in a studio with this? No, this has always been something you've.
They built the little studio, and you can, So it's just right there in the office, you know. So if people come in and look at my terribly disheveled office, they'll say, "Oh, you have a microphone and a soundboard." Like, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, you got a radio show.
And now you like walk into any like 14-year-old kid's bedroom, and you're like, they have like an entire
more
studio.
Equipment than I do, yeah. sound like, better, oh and have God. More and have more of a following. That's the sad thing.
Yeah, because they did something crazy on TikTok.
Yeah. I met a guy on the road that was to do videos. He took, I think it was some kind of a firecracker or a firework thing that you launch, and he shot himself with it.
Oh, lovely.
And took a video of it. It put him in the hospital, but he got so many views. He said, "This is my way forward." So he just kept. He was designing ways to, you know, hurt himself regularly.
Oh,
get a follow, and I was, you know, unsustainable. Kind of went through my head.
Yeah, he was maimed by a firecracker, and it launched.
I can turn these scars into views, you know, and so I thought, yeah, maybe that's what we're all doing, really.
I know you kind of wonder, what am I doing out here anyway?
Metaphorically is what we're doing, I guess.
Listen, in a sense, it's like I view TikTok. I hate to admit it. I finally got on there and am working it because it's an organic reach, but you see a lot of people on there that are just wanting that following. And yes, some people you're just like, oh gosh. But they'll get the following. But you know, then again, don't get me started on China, the True app. What gets promoted in America versus China, and how it's one of the things in our society that I think is really hurting people, the children. It, you know, now people could argue that because there is some good that comes from the app, and I'm not saying that, but you do have a culture of people who are so desperate for validation and attention.
Yeah.
Not like us comedians. I mean, we don't need that. Thank you.
We're not desperate for it. We demand it. We go to a restaurant. We're the center of attention. We're always making noise. We're always, you know.
I've
kind of given up on the whole. I think you have a natural. Well, the logic of it is like, okay, well, I would really like to make a living doing this. So it'd be really great to be famous.
Yeah.
And then if you're famous, you can do ticketed shows and just make, you know, get your audience comes to see you and stuff. So you work really hard to get famous. I'm not even sure that works anymore. I think I've kind of given up on that idea. Just kind of like, well, I've got people that most of the people I perform for don't actually have never heard of me, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of say, well, we wanted Tim Hawkins. We wanted Shonda Pierce.
I guess you'll do.
You're affordable, so we'll give you a shot, you know, and
make us laugh,
you know, and I'll get done with that. And they'll go, that was kind of funny. I can't remember what his name was, but that was good. And then you leave and you go do the next one. That's kind of my career. And I think I'm okay with that. It's just fun to be in front of people, especially since COVID. It's like, oh, people. so happy.
Yeah. Can I reach out?
People. And,
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. So you've basically your entire career, you've done churches, you've done, you know, all sorts of places. So speak a little bit into being a Christian comedian, because I think you're very funny.
Thank you.
And listen, you know, maybe God is just saying, I just want Darren to have a normal life. So I'm just not going to make him too famous, because I want him to be able to go shovel snow without anybody coming up and asking for an autograph.
He's got snow removal to do. He can't be doing comedy.
Can't handle it
24/7. What was the question? I forgot. I was thinking about shoveling snow.
Your career as your Christian comedian, and what did you say? It was like
I was thinking about shoveling snow, and I got lost. And all the snow that's outside.
I'm sure. How much of your life, Darren, has been spent shoveling snow? Let's just real quick. Let's get off topic for a moment.
I think I've you know, grew up in the church, and so it seemed like the natural place to go when they needed comedy. And I started doing church stuff, and then I got involved in comedy clubs, which was Brad Stein kind of coaxed me to do that. He said, when you're with your friends or when you're with audiences that are kind, you don't get the refining that you need to be as good as you probably can be. At least he said that was true for him. You know, there's obviously exceptions. But I took that. I thought, I wonder if I could even do that. And I went into an open mic the first night, and I did okay. You know, I had been doing it for 3 years, just in other stages. And I thought, oh, this is going to work great. And then I got up the second night, and I did a fast food bit that I wrote when I used to work for Burger King.
Ooh.
From the perspective of working in the store and what people do.
Yeah.
And the owner, as you know this, but that's kind of, they call it a hack premise, because it's just so overdone.
Yeah.
Talking about the drive through. So I got basically kicked off stage for about 6 months. And but I kept going to open mics, and just kind of watching and drinking in joke mechanics and how did you do this, and you know, things would happen.
You were studying.
Well, you have to. I mean, it's, if you want to ruin comedy, if you want to stop laughing at funny stuff, go into comedy, because you have to get into the making sausage aspect of it. And it's but I learned some, like, even just callbacks, you know, for the uninitiated, callbacks are kind of when you've established a joke and then you bring that joke forward in later in the show, and there's this history from it, and then we all laugh together. I watched a guy come in, and he did a routine about going to Goodwill or one of the thrift stores, and someone paid 50 cents for a pair of shoes, and it didn't have any laces in it, and they were complaining. And he ranted for 10 minutes on how absurd that was, and just angry, you know. And he was working it out, and he was all angry, and so it was very funny. And then about eight comedians later, I think it was Dwight York came in. Man, I just got here, and I'm really upset. Paid 50 cents for a pair of shoes. No way.
Nice.
Well, it was like a nuclear bomb went off.
He got him. He got him right there, and he had him the rest of the time, I'm sure.
Well, for me, which is, I must do this, you know. So I started working at, you know, the power of the callback sort of started working for me, and I thought that's very powerful, you know. To jumping into other people's stories or just bringing things back in.
Being in the room is so important. And then everybody gets to go in that journey with you. And I think it makes them feel like somehow they're in this with you. They're in that room. This is happening in real time. And I think it gives your audience a little something extra, you know?
Yeah.
It's a little something extra they didn't expect.
The guys that could do improv and stand up were unstoppable. The guys and gals who did that. So did you start in improv or did you start in stand up?
I started in stand up.
You started in stand up.
I did. And you know, it'd be funny because I would get people, like, very early on after I'd get off the stage, they'd be like, "Do you do improv? You improv, right?" And I'm like, "No, I just do stand up because there's a theatrical part to my, I'm just all over a little bit." But I always was concerned about improv because of the aspect of you work with a troupe And I went to see live improv, which I loved, but you are now at the mercy of, you know, when you call out the audience and you ask for, you know, different, you know, give me a topic or whatever, and they say something inappropriate. Now you're in a scene. And I know there's been people that can work around that, but I would never put myself as a woman, as a Christian woman doing comedy. I knew I couldn't put myself in that situation. So I never went for it. But my sister and I, we started an improv troupe several years back called Rubber Ducky Comedy. And we just kept it in the church. We kept it Christian. And then we had a great guy named Mitch Perlman, who's phenomenal. He's still one of the best improv comedians I know, because, you know, he and he's clean. And I think why he's so great, he never, and this is the thing about improv. When you try to be funny in improv, you're not funny. I'm sorry. I mean, if you try too hard, it's just, you ruin it.
Why do you think that is?
People get in there. If you're in your head with improv, you're really not doing it right. You're not supposed to be, at least the way I've been trained, you can't be thinking about what you're going to say most of the time. It just has to flow. And Mitch, and now there's a part of improv. It's like a muscle. Like, you're just going to kind of already have some, like, you know, like your callbacks, like you kind of get trained to be ready to have some sort of response, which I could train for the rest of my life to get better at that. I, you know, there are some people naturally, they just naturally go for it. But Mitch would, it's like, he never tried to be funny. And yet somehow he was the funniest, in my opinion, because he was so rested. He was so not trying to outshine. And that's the thing about improv. It should be, you're in a troupe. You're not trying to outshine the next person. You know, of course, and I have another friend who is also part of our improv troupe. And I used to say it was his show because he's so naturally quirky and funny. Mm. He just couldn't help but be who he is. But it was a perfect element to improv. But that was kind of who he is off stage and on stage. So it didn't really take away from improv, because this guy's a genius. He's quirky genius, and he's that way anyway. But mm-hmm. I could see, and I've seen amateur improv, when people are trying too hard, it's like, just don't try. Just let it happen.
I would be invited on stage early in my stand-up to do improv with people. Mm-hmm. And you know, the lesson is, you take what they're doing and you add to it.
Yeah.
And as a stand-up, I was taking what they were doing, tearing it down and doing my own thing, which, you know, it would derail everything.
Oh, got it. Okay.
And the audience thought it was funny.
Yeah.
But they were like going on the scene. I was like, that's not happening. And then I would just, you know, it was rude. Then I was doing some camera work for somebody, for something. And I realized I'm not good at acting at all. And I went back to one of my, friends who's a professor at university, Tom Isbell, who's been in a lot of movies and stuff. And he said, well, you need improv. So you're going to be in my improv class.
Okay.
And, so I, you know, went back to school, paid the tuition, everything.
Oh, really?
And I was with acting majors, and that, you know, people who are happy all the time. I'd walk into class and they're all juggling. Wonderful. I mean, they were so much fun to be with.
Yeah.
But then they jump into this improv stuff, and it was just, I couldn't believe. So that I just kind of like when I was doing open mics, I just kind of took my cues from them. He did funny improv for the first half, but then he did serious improv, which I thought, what is that going to be like?
Yeah.
And he said, no, we're good. And there was this one scene that he gave it to the guy, mm-hmm. and he didn't tell me who I was. He just said, you just act as he gives you cues of who you are and stuff. And he said, I'm really looking forward to the wedding. And I'm like, oh, yeah, great. And he's like, yeah, they're just, you know, it's so great. We're getting married and stuff. And, but you know, my brother is just so important. And I really love, and he kept talking about it, was how important his brother was. And I said, well, I'm still the best man, right? I just threw that out there.
Yeah.
tears, real tears, started flowing down his face. And he starts to say how much I meant to him as a friend, but he had to pick somebody and stuff like that. Okay, so I'm in a state of shock, which is just...
You're just like, where's the shovel? I need to know. Yeah, nothing. I got to get out of this.
The audience is reading that as my shock that I'm not the best man anymore. And literally there's four or five people in the audience crying, watching our scene and stuff. And I was just watching around going, what is happening here? I couldn't believe it. And then afterward I said, what was that? I said, well, you're catching on. This is how this works. So after I was done with that class, he's an excellent teacher. And I was with one, I was the stupidest student in the, I mean, I just was learning from scratch, but when I left, my kids were like, oh, you're funnier now at the dinner table. Cause I would just kind of dive in. And I think you probably run across this too. When people start joking with me, I think the normal thing when somebody starts joking with you is just start laughing at what they're saying. Mm-hmm. But I would play with them. So it's like, I was in Mars today. I was like, boy, it's been a long time since I've been there. What was it? You know, and then they're like, I'm not being serious. I was joking.
I
was playing along, you know, stuff. And so I have to be kind of keep it, but I've always appreciated you folks who do improv. So you're always just, I've never thrown a joke at you that you didn't play with. You just, you know,
you're know what there. I always described improv class, like, or improv in general, like stand-up comedy. And this is for me, it feels like more like work. You got to work on your set. You got to work on your point. Like you're working on how you're going to deliver it. Improv is like recess for comedians because you just get to play and just have fun and be silly. And if it goes, and by doing that, I just think it's fun, you know, even if I'm not the funniest or didn't come out or and sometimes scene will be called. I'm like, oh, that was stupid. I can't believe I said that part that I did. Or I couldn't think of anything. And I just randomly said this and it was funny. But it's just, to me, it feels like recess, that sometimes I just want to go play games with my comedy friends, and the games you play with comedy, like there's a game called Five Things. Like my sister and I will play it sometimes, like, all right, five things in the back of the trunk of dad's trunk back in the 80s when we were driving around. And we would just, you know, you just randomly say funny things or like just little silly games like that. My sister, she really took improv and went with it. Like I enjoyed
she's
it.
She's very
I
good
had
a, too. She's,
I have
she's
a good time.
Robin, yeah. She's amazing.
She likes the puns. I mean, I'm not good with puns. Like
I'm not
if
either.
It happens without me thinking, I'm like really good at it. But when I try to start thinking of puns, I'm like, you know, I just freeze. But she does the games with her kids and her kids love it. And that was the thing about improv. I would notice you could take the audience, you get the adults laughing and you get the kids laughing. Everybody's laughing, but you know, on different levels. So it's one of those comedy shows, because sometimes different, you know, jokes comedians have, we'll just go over the kids' heads.
But Oh, yeah.
When there's improv, I think kids can kind of catch little things and they just think it's so silly. Yeah. Especially if they call out, tell them a location or whatever. Oh, anyway, well, I don't want to get caught. We'll talk improv all day. We'll talk improv all day.
It's very interesting, though. And it's interesting that people do business seminars, because it helps people to work together if they know how to play together and all those sort of things. It's very interesting.
You know, I think deep down, aren't we all just kids? You know,
we are, I think.
And we just want to play, have a good time, have fun. But how much learning is done through play? So I can see why corporations bring in the improv, you know, it's like, let's let them play. But in playing, they're actually learning how to build team and learning how to build, you know, so there's just some aspects of improv that I just think are a lot of fun.
Yeah. You know? It's amazing. It's amazing. We do it well.
It's exciting. So, I mean, we could talk all day, but so we got let's talk more about Darren Streblow here.
Oh, okay.
We've got an 11-year show. It's syndicated on the weekends. I also know you have an app because I have it on my phone. You have the Darren Treblo app.
Oh, you're my.
so talk about your app.
I get little readouts who's using it, and they say one. Oh, so it's great. Now we've had the app now for 4 or 5 years, and I enjoy that. That's just place to post things and put the show. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, you can play the show whenever you want it, and it's amazing to me how easy doing that is now, you know, posting it and getting it up there and when it lands and stuff. It's incredible. So yeah, we've been doing that for quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
Still trying to figure out the best way to, it's almost like, you know, we were talking about getting famous and selling tickets. It's like people don't really want that anymore anyway. I think what they want, and this is just my observations and anyone can tell me different, but I think they want people they can hang out with a little bit. Mm-hmm. So they want you to be entertaining and stuff like that, but they want a place where they can connect with you and stuff like that. And so I think this kind of stuff is kind of the future, where you got these groups that just, you know, it's like, well, Jen's our comedian and we get together with her every once in a while and she posts stuff, and, you know, I don't know if it's like going from a world stage to just more pockets of people. And, I think I like that. I think I like the community of that and stuff. I like that. So,
yeah, but you're right. You're right. People are, where it's a lot of noise out there right now, right? We're connected almost more than ever, but I do think people still long for community. They long to feel connected. And, you know, if apps can do that, bringing people closer. And I love this app. I mean, it's nice to just, it's clean comedy. I mean, your show, we didn't talk a ton about your show, but you feature a lot of clean comedians. It's all clean comedy. So once again, it goes back to like kids can listen, adults can listen. You're going to get clean content. And it's sometimes you just need to laugh, and boy, do we need to laugh these days. I just feel like there's just so much noise out there. Sometimes you just need to kind of forget about everything and just kind of laugh at the crazy.
Yeah. Thing. During COVID we'd get, you know, we'd try to laugh about what was going on. Just some of the absurdity of it in a time where people were just terrified. So crazy. We had to really be ginger about how we did that, and sometimes it was, you know, not received well.
Yeah.
Because we're just trying to make jokes about, you know, just to get a 50,000 foot view on what's happening.
Yeah.
So that you can have perspective and just feel better.
Yeah.
And there's some people who say, we don't want that. We don't want that. Didn't get a lot of pushback, but it was an interesting time.
Yeah.
But, you know, it, there's definitely a medicinal aspect to comedy that needed to be there. And people were like not ready to do that. This had to be serious. I mean, and it was, but.
That's what comedians do. We let the cat out of the bag, the steam out of the pot. You know, it's like we're here to kind of let some of that off. But
you see you go back in history and you see a lot of the wartime comedy, and it's all making fun of war.
Yeah,
seems kind of inappropriate, but I think people needed a release from the tension and stuff like that, and that's how. I was kind of, even growing up, when we, like, I remember when the shuttle disasters and
Challenger.
Things would happen that were just national news at the time, and very quickly, within like a day, kids had all these jokes about it, really inappropriate jokes. And I was just like, what is that? And I think it's a coping mechanism.
It is. Absolutely. It's such a gift.
Just to kind of get over the trauma, you know, and maybe that's too strong of a word, but how do you take something that's that hard to understand as a kid and put it in a get it in your psyche in a way that you can actually work with it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's why those jokes come out. And I've since talked to a lot of people who do like emergency work.
Okay.
And going and, you know, where they're on the front lines of saving people, and they're working with horrible situations.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very much into making fun of scenarios they're in, to the point I think they say if anybody hurt us, they would be so upset.
Oh,
but
yes,
that's the way they cope with it. That's how they do it. That's otherwise they're gonna have to quit, you know.
Right.
And so comedy is a coping mechanism, definitely.
So speak a little more, and I know you've got to go shovel snow because you got to get somewhere, and I'm I just got to make sure.
That's right.
But just real quick, I know we got to wrap it up because I know we're under some time restrictions this morning. But can you speak a little bit into this? I do feel like we're up against a culture right now that has this spirit of offense that kind of wants to stay bound. And have you noticed any pushback, you know, with a lot of stuff that's happened in the last several years? Do you feel like comedy is not, do you feel like it's kind of having to be filtered out more, and like, oh, we don't want to offend this, and we don't, you know, do you find yourself having to pull back any, or do you find that, hey, I'm going for it and it's not affected me one single bit?
I think I've always admired people that can dive into topics. And it's like, this is what I talk about. I don't care
mm-hmm.
how it shakes down. I've always been kind of, I don't know what the word is. I've been reticent to do that because, I would really like there to be some kind of, you know, peace I want people to feel really good when they leave my shows.
Yeah.
And when I go to see a comedian that is even someone I agree with politically, mm-hmm. and it's all politics,
mm-hmm.
and you know, even if I agree with them 100%, I'm still being shocked back into the world that maybe I need a, you know, I just took a few minutes to make a case that this is how we cope with life. But there's also a kind of a separate, let's just kind of step out of all the stress for a little bit kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. I like that kind of thing. So the stuff that I've always tried to gravitate toward was more, this is the kind of thing that you encounter in everyday life that is funny.
Yeah.
Like, Minnesota's still figuring out roundabouts, so trying to figure that out, and you know, just having a take on something that mundane,
yeah,
funny.
Yeah.
I think that's more delightful for me than taking pot shots at political enemies, I guess.
Right.
Which, and I'm not even saying there's not a place for that. I'm not saying that this shouldn't happen. I'm just saying, for me,
I've your brand.
Mm-hmm. No, I just mm-hmm. I don't do that with other, you know, when I get together with other people, I'm not just like, well, you're thinking correctly about this, right? You know, I try mm-hmm. not to do that. You know, I want to have kind of a more of a, I don't know, just entertainment. So I've steered clear of that kind of stuff, like
certain topics, like, certain, sure. And
if I talk about it, I want to talk about, if I want to talk about something that is going to change you, I don't think my politics are going to do that anyway, because you can, for me, the thing that I've been trying to learn, you know, and it's taken me, you know, I'm 52.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I had a handle on this till even 5 years ago. It's just mm-hmm. politics aren't going to save you. You're following your heart isn't going to save you.
Mm-hmm.
Friendships are great. They're not going to save you. Your family's not. You really, my relationship with God
mm-hmm.
is the only thing, you know, in Jesus is the only thing that actually brings real change and real hope in my life. And I've, you know, for many years, even though I went to church, I kind of ran from that. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't even think I was running from it. You know, I thought, I didn't think I was, but to the extent that I was following my own thing,
mm-hmm.
My own ideas, and that was running away from God. And I just find that that's really what makes a difference. So if I want to talk about that, that's what I like to talk about. And
well, you get down to the nitty gritty. Like, you're just like, we can just, because really, isn't that the heart of, you know, what we're here? I mean, and I wish this was your sweatshirt. I have a sweatshirt on that says Jesus Saves. I wish this was your merch right now.
That's a great phrase. I wish I would have invented that. That would have.
Because then I could say, now go to darrenstreblo.com and get your Jesus Saves sweatshirt that I am now wearing. But no, it just summed up everything you just said in a sense. And, but that's part of your story. And it's almost, to me, you just got down to like the true, I believe we're in a true battle of good and evil, light and dark. And we could paint it up this, and it's this person. And that's the enemy. No, that's the enemy. And you could spend all day long trying to figure out who the enemy is. But we, you and I know, no, it's the true enemy is Satan. And this is a battle of good and evil. And I don't know where to go after that.
You know, I can try to yell at people to vote the way I vote or think the way I do or something like that. And in the end, it won't help at all.
Yeah.
It won't really help at all. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been trying to, when there are opportunities, and you can't really, you know, in when you do club work, you're an entertainer, you know, I could get up and talk about Jesus once for about a half hour and then they'd say, yeah, you're done. And maybe that would be appropriate someday, but it's, you know, in those settings, you're just being funny and, you know, you do your dry bar shows and you're just funny and stuff. And that's really the reason someone would bring us in is to be funny, because the people need that. But if there's going to be some kind of anything meaningful, I think it has to be about Christ, because it's just,
I agree.
There's nothing else for me anyway. And it's not something I've been particularly good at my whole life. So, you know,
hey, listen, I'm right there with you. God is just like, oh, you really want to do this? Okay, here it is. You're like, oh, there's more, but there's more.
Yeah.
So I feel you on that, but oh, so good. Like I know you got to go, shovel that snow and get to your appointment. But so those that want to find you, they can go to your website, darrenstreblo.com. That's Darren with one R, D-A-R-E-N, and then Streblo, S-T-R.
I can't do the camera right. I was going to point at it.
L-O-W.com. So, and there you can, or if you go to the app store on your phone, Darren Streblo, and you can download the app and listen to comedians all over the world that are funny, that are clean, and it's a family-friendly show. And and then your website would have where Darren's going to be next and your schedule and anything coming that you wanting to talk about or anything else that I didn't share.
Well, just honor to be on your show. I appreciate that. I appreciate you as a performer, and you have a real heart for people. And, you know, so, and I just think you're doing great, and keep doing what you're doing. Remember us little people when you come into your kingdom. And you know,
Well, listen, we'll have to have you on again. Always good to chat with you, Darren. And
you too.
Please go check out Darren Streblo, and you'll see why I'm a huge fan. And so we'll do this again. So thanks for coming on. And
you bet. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Good to see you. Yep.